Recyclical, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclical's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium-ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclical Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB AMYZF, and Frankfurt ID4. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Rick Ackerman, editor of the newsletter Rick's Picks, his website rickackerman.com. He's speaking to us from South Florida. Welcome back to the show, Rick.
Thanks very much for inviting me on, Jim. It's always a pleasure.
Rick, is the market in danger of major slippage?
Yeah, I think so. I'm on DEFCON 5 alert here because back in 2023, I put out a target on Microsoft at 430.58, and the stock was trading, I think, in the low threes then, but it eventually found its way up to that price about 8 weeks ago, and it's only gotten past it by a couple of bucks so far, so there is that chance that we're making a very important top here.
Microsoft, is it the bellwether it used to be?
Well, I think it's always been a good bellwether. I used to follow Apple for that reason. The logic was, if Apple's still going higher, then the market will be going higher. And of course, Apple at the time, maybe still is the biggest cap stock in the world. But Apple has really lost its mojo. They do sell a lot of iPhones. They sell a zillion of them. But I think their overpriced phones are very vulnerable in a recession. And of course, as an innovator, Microsoft is an absolute has-been. They couldn't innovate their way out of a wet paper bag. So I've sort of switched to Microsoft as the key bellwether. I think it's the best stock now. NVIDIA, they seem at each step of the way to get a lock on the next big thing with their chips, and it's a phenomenal company, but I think it's pretty fully priced. But Microsoft, on the other hand, the price of the stock bears a relationship to earnings that are less storied, let's say, than Nvidia's potential. So Microsoft has moved to a subscription model, and I think that even in a global economic depression, we're all going to be, paying our subscription fees every year to get the latest Outlook, to get the operating system updates and things like that. So Microsoft's revenue stream is bomb-proof. It really is. And they've got, obviously, a huge captive audience with the Windows operating system. So it's a great, the company, there's no putting a knock on it. And so it stands to reason that if Microsoft is topping, then so is the bull market.
Is there anybody else who could fill that gap and might be more affordable in the same sector?
Fill the gap? No. I mean, nobody can. I guess they're all sort of angling for some piece of the AI market with the Microsoft. It's with it's called ASIC, I think. Everybody's got their own little, sales gimmick. And of course, let me mention that Rick's Picks, we've just incorporated some AI stuff into our technical model. And of course, I'm just joking. It's the same. I was an English major, so I don't really push that far into the wilds of AI. But anyway, no, nobody's going to take Microsoft's place. No other company is going to step up to it. Musk maybe has the possibility to produce something spectacular. It would probably have to do with battery storage. Power storage, but that's like saying some company is in the early stages of developing a fusion reactor. So, no, Microsoft is still going to be the one.
In the electronic vehicle market, are we seeing the same thing happening as the start of the internal combustion engine automobile, where, you know, if you look at the turn of the century from 18 into 1900s, in the early 1900s, there were hundreds of car companies, but eventually it all settled down to Ford, Chrysler, General Motors. Studebaker was in there for a while in North America. Is that the same thing that's going to happen again? You have a lot of EV makers, and already you have GM and Ford seem to be pretty well bailing out of it.
Yeah, I think it's we're not going to see, you know, there'll be some dominant manufacturers, and right now the question is whether it's going to be whether China is going to get the upper hand on Musk. But there are a lot of problems. You know, we're at a point in the replacement cycle of the initial Teslas that were sold, where some of the problems are coming to the foreground. You know, last winter we saw the difficulty of keeping your Tesla charged in very cold places like Chicago, and but more critically, you've got a battery disposal problem that's not going to go away. They're going to have to change the composition of the batteries. But most immediately, there's this repair problem. If you get a dent in the front of your Tesla that somehow impacts the battery pack, the power pack, there aren't enough repairmen who can work on that right now, and insurance companies are totaling out only slightly damaged Teslas, which is not to mention also the vulnerability of EV makers to problems with the chips. You know, I think I mentioned to you that a buddy of mine who's got a Tesla Plaid, we're talking, I think, $140,000 car, but he developed a seatbelt problem, and they gave him a whole new car because they couldn't get the chip that retracts the seatbelt. At least they couldn't get it right away. So there's so many problems with these EVs, and but paradoxically, there are few barriers to entry. You know, it's a real project to make an internal combustion engine car. There are a lot of parts, but of course, with the motor drive that makes these EVs move, anybody can get in the game. You could yourself just by buying the electric motors and installing them on each axle. So we may see a lot more companies, and yeah, I guess the bigger ones with the best solutions are going to prevail. But for the time being, maybe yes, we'll see a proliferation of automakers in the same way that we did in the early age of the combustion engine auto.
Also, I guess with the EV people, North Americans have long distances between their destinations. In Europe, everything's jammed together, so an EV can get you across just about all of Europe on one charge. Here, it barely gets you between two cities.
Yeah, and that's it's possible to deal with that. I mean, you have a quicker charging system so that you can get almost a full charge, maybe a 70 or 80% charge, in a relatively small amount of time, comparable to what you would spend just gassing up. So I think, you know, the range problem is becoming less and less critical. But as I mentioned, in the winter, it's become a real problem.
Now, in Britain, I know they were going to have a green lane, Sweden has it, that charges your car as you drive along it. It's so there's some kind of an electrostatic charging system. Britain was going to do it, but they abandoned it as being way too expensive.
Yeah, it's got to be very expensive. I wonder where the Swedes get all that money, really. But I'm trying to play that forward from a marketing standpoint, and I'm not sure what the advantage would be.
Well, you don't have to stop to charge your car.
Yeah, but what are the incentives there? It's going to put maybe more people on the road. The lane that does the charging will be like the opposite of an express lane. It'll be, and everybody with an EV is in this lane. And I'm not sure. I have trouble seeing how that idea could work.
Well, also, too, where you get a lot of snow and rain. Sweden definitely gets lots of snow, so they must have some kind of solution there. And again, being the first, there's going to be problems with it. But then remember when the first car tried to go to the World's Fair, they had to buy the fuel for it at drugstores because gasoline stations didn't exist. Now, we have politicians trying to force this through at a very rapid pace where 2035, you won't be allowed to buy a new internal combustion engine. Look how long it took to transpose society from relying on the horse to the automobile. The German army was still using horses to pull their supplies and artillery in the Second World War. We always talk about Blitzkrieg, but behind the tanks were horses.
I think that was pretty fuel efficient, actually, you know. But
as they found it in Russia, if you stall, you can always eat your horse.
I think that's what happened, actually.
But again, that transition, so you're talking 45 years after cars came along, and some milk carts still in the 60s were being drawn by horses.
True, and horses have never become obsolete. There are even for certain types of police work, they've been holding their own.
Yes, they use Percherons, the same ones the knights of the Middle Ages used. Pretty damn scary when you see those big beasts coming at you.
Well, you know, I was recently in Charleston, and they've got a livery stable sort of in the key area of downtown. These giant, I think they are Percherons, but they're at the time there were a couple little kids being nice, and it was a pretty good a nice scene, really, because they're very gentle horses. My son works with horses. He trains them and shoes them, and he's always said that they're just that horses, they just don't know how big and strong they are.
Oh, I firmly believe in evolution, and someday a horse is going to realize, why am I letting that little puny person lead me around by this string?
Because that little puny person feeds him, and I guess that's where
that's how we get all the animals to be our friends. Whereas, of course, dogs have owners, cats have staff. What have you done for me lately? You can just see your cat looking at you. What have you done for me lately?
Yeah, there's a definite difference there. We've had households with dogs and cats in them, and we had a big dog. It was a mostly Great Pyrenees and a little cat, but the cat used to terrorize the dog. And eventually, you know, they work out a truce.
Yes. Now, getting into gold, what's going on there? Has it peaked out, or is it still showing long-term strength?
Oh, nowhere near peaked. I say that, but I do have a target on June gold. It's not really at the infinity line. It's very finite. It's around 2558, I believe. But I'll be interested to see what happens when it gets up to that threshold. If it pushes right through, then I'll have to extrapolate a target from a larger time frame chart. But we're definitely in a nice bull market, and I expect that before it's over, we're going to finally see the gold stocks, the mining companies, exploration companies. They're going to pop at some point, but we're nowhere near there yet.
We'll have more with Rick Ackerman right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Rick Ackerman. Rick, is silver ever going to catch up to gold and go back to one of its more traditional gold-to-silver ratios, or is that big gap going to remain?
Well, more like the opposite, you know, the way silver had, it's had a couple good days recently, so much so that it's really gold that's got to do the catching up. You know, in this past week, we had a big move. Silver went from, this was the July contract, around $30.50 up to 32.5. So that's a pretty substantial move for a couple of days. And it gave you an idea of how volatile silver can be. We recently, this was mid-May, around May 17th, I think it was, giant move from 29.5 up to, it was like $3 per ounce move over the space of just a day and a half. So, you know, it's clear that silver, the price has been suppressed for a long time by the usual sleazeballs papering over demand with paper. So, everybody I know who buys silver on a regular basis, the deliveries at times are longer now, and it's a generally known fact that the supply of silver in the hands of dealers is nowhere near the demand right now. So sooner or later, that's going to have its effect, and so silver over short periods, I think, can be a lot feistier than gold. And when it is, it's going to give all the gold bugs this idea about, hey, the bull market is here. So it's becoming more challenging for the sleazeballs to suppress the price of silver. And if it breaks loose, we're going to see a massive bullion rally.
Now, we have consumer sales of gold. Costco selling over $100 million worth of gold to its members. Walmart is also selling gold. And you wouldn't think the Walmart crowd was into gold, but apparently even well-off people are feeling the crunch of inflation and are shopping at Walmart. So why not top up the portfolio with some gold while you're getting some affordable socks and underwear?
You know, ordinarily, I would say that's a sign of a top when the likes of Walmart gets in the business of selling bullion. But I don't think so. I think it really, it's a good, healthy reflection of grassroots demand for it. And you'll know that demand is starting to worry the powers that be when Walmart starts turning up customers like the Sovereign Fund of India or Kuwait or whatever, because at some point there will be that concern at the official level that the U.S. supplies of gold will be depleted by foreign buyers. And I think at some point you're going to see restrictions placed on outflows of gold. That's not now exactly, because we don't really, our money system is still completely detached from gold, other than as an idea in the minds of gold bugs. But I think it's predictable that you'll see controls on outflows of gold at some point within the next few years.
Apparently there's already a deficit in silver, and it's been growing over the last 4 years. At some point, the demand for silver just won't be met.
Yeah, which means you should be making hay right now. You can go out there right now and buy tons of Morgan silver dollars and things like that. But I would say get them while they last.
Now, copper, is it peaking out, or is it showing long-term growth?
Well, copper's got a little bit of that AI magic hubris in it, based on the fact that these EVs use a lot of copper. So copper for a while became kind of a meme play, and I don't know whether it was the, I say this jokingly, the Robin Hoodies who were driving the global price of copper higher. But I'm going to look at a July chart here of high grade copper, And let's see what we can see. We're in a, it's had a pretty spectacular uptrend. Keep in mind that the rally in copper began from about, $2 $2.20 a pound back in the day one of the COVID era, which was March of 2020. All right, so we had an enormous rally. Copper went as high as $4.70 a pound over the next 2 years. And it pulled back quite a bit over 2022. But now we've had this very steep phase of the rally, which began in February from around $3.70 a pound, currently trading off a high of, $5.12 a pound. But I think copper has the potential to go somewhat higher. My target is $5.72 a pound. The pullback that's occurred, we're currently at $4.65 a pound, could come all the way down to $4 and I think still be a candidate for another big rally up. But I do think we won't see a top in copper until it gets to $5.72.
Anything else we should be keeping a close eye on?
Well, just what I mentioned earlier, I think we're in a very precarious place right now. I was looking at the diamonds. That's an exchange-traded fund for the Dow. And at the beginning of the day, or last night, I guess, it was sitting right on a key support. And it looks like it's going to break through that support today. So keep your eye on the Dow and some of the and the indexes, because if the weakness that we've seen over the last couple of days develops a little bit, starts to snowball, this could be start of something big, especially in the light of what I mentioned concerning Microsoft topping at a major target, hidden pivot target of $430. So we're in the danger zone right now.
Rick, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Oh, it's always a pleasure, Jim. I want to thank you for inviting me on.
My guest has been Rick Ackerman, editor of the newsletter Rick's Picks. His website, rickackerman.com. If you have any questions for Rick or for any of our guests, you can send them to info@howstreet.com. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. Find us on X at How Street. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com, HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.